Thanks for listening to this podcast of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes it possible. Thank you.
Right now, in the United States, the vast majority of psychologists, psychiatrists, and counselors believe in God. The vast majority of them, even if they don't personally believe in God, recognize the importance of faith in a person's life for healing and for wholeness.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. My name is Micah Fries, and we're excited, as always, to continue this conversation about truth, thoughts, and theology. Now, this week on today's show, we're going to be talking with Amy Simpson. Amy has been a writer for 20 years. She's worked with Christianity Today and Leadership Journal. But for today's show, we're going to dialogue with her about mental illness, an issue that she's personally familiar with because of some situations in her family that she'll share with us in a few minutes. She's written a book on the topic called Troubled Minds that talks about how the church can serve those who struggle with mental illness. Recently, she was at the Peace of Mind Conference in Tyler, Texas, along with Ed, and they sat down to talk a little bit about the topic. Now, a little bit later in the show, we're going to dialogue about small groups, and we're going to, as always, see some horrible church signs that you've sent into us that are going to make you laugh. But we'd love to continue the dialogue with you as we go through the show through social media. Remember to use hashtag The Exchange. Now, before we get into the serious conversation with Amy, let's hear from my good friend D.A. Horton as he talks to us about contextualization and the gospel.
One time I was unpacking the gospel to a young Mexican kid on the block in Kansas City, and he couldn't understand the concept of sin. And when I stepped back and I noticed the colors he was wearing, I said, "Man, how would you feel if I walked up to your house and I was wearing all red? Like, would you let me in your house?" And he said a few expletives, and he said, "Nah, I wouldn't let you in my house." And I said, "Well, if you wouldn't let me into the crib, then would you at least walk two blocks over to the corner store to get some refreshments with me?" And he was like, "Nah, I wouldn't even do that. I don't want to be seen with you because of the colors you have on." I'm like, "So my clothes are an offense to you?" And he said, "Yeah." And I use that to leverage the reality of sin, that we were born dead in sin. So we have the wrong clothes on. And we can't get into the household of faith, and we won't even be in fellowship with God because we have the wrong clothes on. But the beauty of the gospel tells us that Jesus left the comforts of the crib in order to live a perfect life. And basically, through his death, burial, and resurrection, he's got a new set of clothes for us. And he then clothes us in his righteousness, which not only lets us into the house, it adopts us into the family of God. And he is going to be in fellowship with us for all of eternity.
I used to say all the time, there's a leadership problem in the church. There's a leadership problem in the church. After years of saying that, I came to realize I really don't think that's true.
I keep coming back to Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, and it says that Christ gave us the apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, teachers. Why? To equip. That word there, equip, is train, okay, to train. Why? So that the church can do the work and then be built up.
You see, throughout Scripture, what we find for the Christian is not so much that they're coming to church in order to watch others do ministry, but the reality is in the Scripture you see God has a holy calling on the life of every individual believer to be a missionary engaged in his purpose to redeem people from every tongue, and every tribe, and every nation on this planet.
Yeah, Jesus took these men who didn't even know how to lead themselves. He took a group of men that were willing to follow him, and he did leadership development with them. He discipled them to the point where they just didn't have intimacy with God. They had influence with others.
It's this holy cause ordained by God that we have to get. And I think as pastors and leaders, we have to understand it's not just up to us.
This equipping of these people will lead to the growth of the body, to the expansion of the church, to the accomplishing of God's mission throughout the nations.
I don't think there's a leadership problem in the church. I think there's a leadership development problem in the church.
Give your church a modern tool for leadership development, Ministry Grid. Learn more at ministrygrid.com.
Tell me a little bit about your interest in mental illness, mental health. We're actually here at the Peace of Mind Tyler Conference where we're recording. You just spoke in front of about 9,000 people. I shared a little data. Others shared as well. Great interest here, but how did you get to that point of interest?
Yeah, it's really a matter of combining two of the most important things in my life, important influences in my life. One is my mom mm-hmm. and my family background, and the other one is my love for the church. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a family tremendously affected by mental illness. My mom has been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and that's an illness that affected her to some degree since before I was ever born, but became much more severe and pronounced and obvious when I was 14 years old. So since then, it's been just a huge part of my family's life, sometimes a huge crisis for us, and obviously a real source of grief and pain and loss in our family's life. So there's my personal experience, and then my love for the church and my strong belief that the church really is the place to find hope and healing in this world. I would love to see the church be the church when it comes to people who are suffering because of mental illness, either because of their own or because of a family member's, to really step into that space, to understand the gaps that exist in our mental health care system and how well the church is positioned to fill some of those gaps, and also to just understand how mental ministry to people affected by mental illness is part of our calling as the church. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't be the church that we are called to be and at the same time ignore 26.2% of the adult population and the very serious struggles that they go to on a daily basis.
Well, it seems that sometimes there's almost like a mixed message that maybe churches are receiving. It seems like sometimes it's you know, come here and be involved. Other times it's give away and refer. And so this can be. And so sometimes churches have sort of abdicated their responsibility or just sort of, you refer the whole thing away. You know, mental illness, you take care of the medical professionals. And sometimes they've isolated themselves and said, we're not going to partner with medical professionals. We're nervous or concerned about them. Where do we find the balance, and how do we find that balance in our churches?
Yeah, it's really important, I think, to recognize what the church can offer, what the church can't or shouldn't offer, and the power of partnership. Like you said, sometimes churches make the mistake of believing we can handle it all ourselves. And this is, especially if they believe, you know, this is really a spiritual problem and it's something for the church and the pastor to address, and we're not interested in what other people can offer. Other times they make the mistake of referring people out and believing their job is done. There's nothing more for the church to offer. And it's neither. It's a matter of recognizing that people who have a mental illness have an actual illness.
They are sick.
They are sick, and they need treatment. And so helping bridge that gap for them, helping them find the help they need, but then recognizing that once they found that help, you know, the psychiatrist is not there to be their best friend. The counselor is not there to answer all their spiritual questions. You know, a support group is not intended to be the only community that you have in your life. The church can help with all of those things. We can be friends to people who are experiencing mental illness. We can address those faith crises and those spiritual questions. We can be a community of support. I don't know if a lot of people think about the unique place that the church has in our society right now. We are such a disconnected society. The church is one of the only places we have left where you can get up on a Sunday morning, drive to a church, and you can find people there who are willing to love you.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, a built-in community. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that community is functional or dysfunctional,
there are certainly issues, but still.
It depends, but absolutely, it's one of the only places you can find that. This is one of the things that people affected by mental illness most need, is that sense of community, and community that will not walk away from them when they're in crisis or when they're at their worst. So just recognizing, you know, the church has a role to play here, not only in spiritually, but in offering community and in offering love and helping people find the medically based help they need, and then just being there, sticking with them, being the church to them.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. So we've got the church community on one hand, we've got the medically based needs on the other. So and I think that would be obvious to a lot of people, not all, but our study showed that among pastors, really 0% when you round it down, but 0.3% of pastors would say never medication. So it seems that there's an okay and acceptance of medication. Maybe it's the therapy that's the issue. It's the talk therapy that's the issue. Would you say that should, a bridge would be Christian talk therapy? Would you say, no, I'd go either direction? And where's the pastor's role in that as well? Because settling is too strong a term, but for us at the moment, settling the medical issue, settling the church community issue, what's the counseling? Let's work through this. Let's talk through this together. And what's the church's role there?
Yeah, I think sometimes churches are afraid of, or pastors even are afraid of psychotherapy or afraid of psychology because they have some misunderstandings about what it is. Maybe they have information, outdated information about the roots of psychology or the science behind it.
Well, some of them, when I commented this on Facebook recently, someone pointed out Freud believed this. And I want to say nobody really has quoted Freud in psychotherapy in a very long time.
Right. Freud may be a historical figure that is very important to psychology. He and his theories do not inform the vast, vast majority of practitioners these days. There was a time when belief in God was frowned upon in that community because of the theories that Freud laid down. Right now, in the United States, the vast majority of psychologists, psychiatrists, and counselors believe in God. The vast majority of them, even if they don't personally believe in God, recognize the importance of faith in a person's life for healing and for wholeness. So they support going to church. They support being involved in a faith community. They support belief in God. It's not, there's no conflict from the psychology and the psychotherapy side. There's no real conflict between that and faith. It kind of comes from the faith side. I think often it's based in a misunderstanding. Sometimes I think it's based in arrogance, in the belief that we have everything we need. We don't need other people, or we don't have anything to learn from people who are outside the church. It's funny because we don't really, I mean, it would be a very, very fringe view if we were to take that perspective regarding other types of medical needs. You know, if I were to say, stand up in my church and say, if you've got, you know, cancer or diabetes, don't you dare go to a doctor because that doctor might not be a Christian.
Sure.
Or they might, you know, be coming from a different worldview. That would be a horrible thing to say, and I would probably get kicked out of my church. You know, I mean, that would be a very serious form of misleading people.
I do think there's a debate, though, that, that a little bit of the origins of it even spills into popular culture, not even the Christian thing, but the origins of psychiatry and origins of psychology. And as evangelicals, we would disagree with some of the fundamental worldview assumptions while acknowledging all truth is God's truth, and we want to learn from that. So where does Christian counseling fit into that?
Yeah.
And you've been in many Christian counseling things.
My husband's a Christian counselor,
exactly. And I'll be presenting some data at the National Association of Christian Counselors. We're here at Peace of Mind Christian Counseling event. So talk to us. How does the role of faith kind of improve that counseling opportunity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're working with a Christian counselor, I mean, in some ways it's the best of both worlds, assuming you've got a highly qualified, good counselor. Because someone's a Christian counselor doesn't mean they're a great counselor.
Just because they say Christian and counselor doesn't mean that they are.
But most of them are, and they're really well positioned to sort of mesh the faith concerns and support a person's spiritual life and support them emotionally and mentally. There are so many people, professionally trained people out there who also are Christians, who are tremendously caring and equipped to help in these situations. And, you know, the idea that we would be suspicious of them or discourage people from seeing them it's unconscionable, really.
It's an odd thing to think that people spend their lives trying to help others and there's just an immediate suspicion. I would say, you know, we get the best of both worlds with Christian counseling, but we also need to ask the question, how do we not isolate ourselves, but how do we partner in appropriate ways with professionals who consist in wholeness?
And especially pastors and other church leaders, it's tremendously important to try to build that partnership with mental health practitioners. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great idea to have a list of people that you can refer
to. A little over 2/3 said they did. But when we asked the families of those who are struggling with mental health, only a third of them actually thought the same thing. So it seems that pastors may have a list, but the church doesn't know that that's even an option.
Yeah, there's a disconnect there somewhere. But if someone in the congregation is seeing a mental health professional, it's a fantastic idea for a pastor or a ministry leader or someone in that church who's connected with that individual or that family to ask for permission to partner with that person, to talk to the mental health professional. If the individual or the family is willing, they can sign a consent form, open those lines of communication, and then suddenly you've got that partnership in place. And all of the mental health professionals I know, and I know a lot of them because my husband is one of them, and because I'm, you know, kind of part of this community, all of them have told me they absolutely welcome that. They want that. Yeah. They want to be connected with the faith leaders so that they can offer more holistic care and so that they know that there's a support system outside what they're providing, you know, from their professional perspective. They want to know that their clients and their patients are supported, so they're perfectly willing to do that. And the church then can get so much out of that in terms of knowledge and understanding for how they can come around that person and support them.
Meet Pastor Doug. He loves movies and wants to create a movie night for his church and community. Pastor Doug knows movies can inspire, challenge us to think about our own lives. So Pastor Doug turned to Lifeway Films. They're a great way to reach his community and strengthen families. We help churches share the gospel through with movies and related Bible studies or discussion guides, Lifeway Films gives you the confidence that every movie is carefully reviewed and selected to ensure it is entertaining, theologically sound, and age-appropriate for the intended audience. Lifeway Films also makes it legal for your church to show movies. Many churches have blanket licenses for music and media, but those don't cover all movies. Churches can be confident that our films keep them in compliance with the law. Take it from Pastor Doug. Have a church movie night and share the greatest story ever told, the gospel, in entertaining, inviting, and life-changing ways.
Learn more about Lifeway Films at lifewayfilms.com.
We're going to continue our conversation with Ed and Amy in just a few minutes, but right now, here's some training from our friends at Ministry Grid with Steve Gladen about leading small groups in the church. Now, if you don't know Steve, if there's anyone in the country who can talk to us about how to lead small groups well, it's Steve. He's done it in various denominational contexts, churches of all sizes, and now he's going to give you some help as you lead small groups in your own church.
When you are wondering how big my group can get, your first question should not be the size of your group, but what it should be is everybody talking. Because when everybody talks, sharing happens. And when sharing happens, you start to get glimpses into their soul. You're going to learn through the questions they ask, you're going to learn about studies you should do. When they're sharing about some tougher times, you're going to learn about how you can support them. When sharing happens on things they love to do, you're going to know about other activities that you can do in your informal time of your group meeting outside the weekly time when you're meeting for activities you can do. You're going to learn so much that can take your group so deep. So understand that you want to look and make sure everybody talks, but you also want to look at subgrouping so that you can help raise the leaders that your church is going to need.
So you've written a book, Troubled Minds. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the book and kind of what who's it geared towards? What's the message and the big theme?
Yeah, the Troubled Minds is really geared toward the church. It's particularly geared toward leaders in the church or toward people who really they're not showing up every Sunday, but they're thinking about what being part of the church means and how it can be better. The subtitle of the book really kind of says it. It's Mental Illness and the Church's Mission.
Yeah.
So what the book does
and
is share...
I've read it, and I love how you tied it to mission.
Yeah.
It's kind of my field, and I love how you tied it to mission, because so many times it's, you should do... You're saying it's a mission. This is mission.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No, it's true. Because the way I see it, this is inherent in our calling as the church. So the book includes some of my own family's story and the journey that we've been on. It includes the stories of a lot of other people who have walked down this road either because of their own mental illness or the illness of someone they love, and tries to give an understanding of what life is like on that journey. It also gives some information about mental illness and basically calls the church to stand in this gap, helps to illuminate the gap that exists, and then makes that connection between the situation as it is now, what people go through, what the church is and is called to be, and what that means. Good. You know, the church really, if we are being the church, it really is inherent in our mission that we live to reach out to the least of these, that we reach out to the marginalized and the hurting, that we are communities of that are honest and authentic about the conditions that we live in this life, on this earth, that we are all broken and scarred and flawed, and we all struggle. And whether we struggle with mental health or not, there's something that we all struggle with. Our communities are flawed, and it's okay to suffer in the church.
Yeah.
It should be okay to suffer in the church.
It should be.
But
the
not just
so we don't have to suffer alone. I mean, that's part of why
absolutely.
It's there.
Absolutely, and so that we find hope there.
That's right.
So, you know, the church is called to suffer together, but to find hope together as well.
That's good.
And to bring hope and healing to one another.
Are we making progress, do you think, in the last few years?
I do, actually.
I mean, you're a keen observer. You're kind of an evangelical insider and beyond. it feels like it. You know, I mean, with the Warrens, you know, become so mm-hmm. public, and others, its stigma seems to be. We still got a ways to go, but I mean, are you seeing it?
I am seeing it, and I think one of the most significant things that we are doing is one of the most simple things. You know, people wonder, what can we do? Yeah. What can I do? I'm telling you, just talking about is making an enormous difference. Mm-hmm. It really is. So as we, you know, we hold this these events like Peace of Mind Tyler.
Yeah, and which was planning for 300 and had 900.
Yeah.
So it's just the hunger and desire to
Absolutely.
Think through these issues.
There's been so much silence. Yeah. And the thing is, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. Mm-hmm. We have this terrible stigma around mental mm-hmm. illness that causes people to stay silent. And guess what? Their silence reinforces that stigma.
Sure.
It, you know, we need to speak up and speak out. Now, some people are not in a position to stand up, you know, in a room full of people and say, this is my experience. Some people aren't in a position to reach out or help others. They need help in healing themselves. But some of us are.
That's right.
And I'm tremendously excited that places and people all around the country are hosting events like
this.
They're inquiring, they're starting support groups, they're doing something. And really it can start very simply by just talking about it and by doing the things that we already know how to do for suffering people.
And I'm thankful that you're kind of giving voice to a lot of that conversation. You mentioned stigma. We talked about a lot today at Peace of Mind, Tyler, about breaking the stigma. We're both kind of in the evangelical tradition in the larger Christian world. Do you think that we have greater stigma among our churches than maybe, I don't know, more progressive or other denomination or other historic Christian traditions?
I do, actually. Yeah. That's been my experience.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's important to acknowledge, too, that this isn't the only place stigma exists.
Yeah.
It exists in our broader culture, mm-hmm. And it exists, you know, throughout the church. But yes, I do think there are some additional layers of stigma mm-hmm. that are present within the church, and then maybe a couple more
so
within the
us
evangelical
about
church.
So talk about somehow we can address, to evangelicals, not everyone who watch will be an evangelical, but to people, evangelicals historically take the Bible seriously, want to share the gospel, I mean, different definitions. So why do we have a greater stigma among our tribe and family than others?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the reasons is, and this really goes to the roots of stigma itself. I mean, stigma is really based in fear and misunderstanding. And I think within the evangelical tradition, there's maybe some additional fear and misunderstanding that comes partly because of misinformation mm-hmm. and partly because... trying to think how to say this. I think we sometimes are very tempted to believe that we have it all figured out.
That's an isolation.
We know all
the answers.
We don't need partners
or to help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're part of the church, then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a complete lie.
Yeah. I mean, there's brokenness outside, but there's a whole lot of brokenness inside.
Absolutely.
Nobody gets through a broken world unbroken. I mean,
exactly.
We all have brokenness.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have hope. We have tremendous hope for this life. We have redemption. Mm-hmm. We have sanctification. You know, the Holy Spirit, if He lives within us, He is changing us, and He is in the process of making us new. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. But it does not mean that we are fixed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we don't suffer. It doesn't mean that we don't still live in a world where decay and disorder and injury mm-hmm. can happen to our brains. We're not protected from those things just because we happen to
Jesus said, when
be
it rains,
Christians.
It rains on the just and the unjust.
Absolutely.
So it still does.
Yep.
Give advice to pastors and church leaders. That's our primary audience. And they I encourage them to get the book. We put it on the screen so they can do that. But what would you say to them about some next steps? You just gave you had a whole lot of steps in your talk here at Peace of Mind, Tyler. So give us some of those steps. What are some next steps pastors can take?
Yeah, so I'll say again that maybe the most important thing is to start at the beginning with that simple stuff mm-hmm. that's, you know, easy to overlook, but actually really easy also to start doing, and that is to start talking about mental illness. You don't have to give a 5-week sermon mm-hmm. on sermon series on mental health, but when you're giving a sermon that mentions some of the difficulties and troubles that we go through in this life, why not mention depression? Why not mention bipolar disorder mm-hmm. and schizophrenia? Why not mention anxiety disorders? Just acknowledging that they exist and that they can exist within the church. Mm. Can be extremely powerful for people who feel that they are the only
ones.
And
statistically, 66% mention it once or less in
mm-hmm.
a year.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Bible's full of talk. And we talk all the time about struggle. So mm-hmm. why not put that in if so many struggle? Okay, so first and foremost, mention it, okay?
Yeah. Also, I think it's extremely important to revisit the theology of your church, and not just the theology that you have on paper, but what are you actually teaching from week to week? Are you teaching that or allowing, sometimes it's just a matter of allowing this to persist, the idea that if you're a Christian, you don't suffer. If you have a faith in Christ, your problems are over, or at least serious problems. Sure. You shouldn't really expect anything really bad to happen to you. It's a very unbiblical idea. Most churches aren't teaching it overtly. A lot of churches are sort of teaching it by accident or allowing it to persist. So I think it's important to visit that theology and take a hard look at that. And also at the culture of your church. Is it a safe place to suffer? Is it an authentic community where people are open about their imperfections and their hardships? Then, I mean, you can go from there to be very specific and make an investment in mental health ministry. We have churches who are doing support groups for divorce care and substance abuse and, you know, single parenting and all kinds of struggles and hardships who have nothing for people who are going through mental health problems, which, you know, again, we're talking about more than a quarter of the population. So when you add up that quarter of the population that will experience one this year, plus the people who have experienced a mental health problem last year or will next year or sometime in the course of their lifetime, when we're talking about almost half of the population, then when you add to that the family members of people who are loving and supporting someone affected by a mental illness, I mean, really, this touches everybody.
Yes.
And because of stigma, because of our silence, many, many people truly believe they are alone. They're the only ones. Or maybe they're part of a very small fringe group of people. They have no idea that how much empathy and support is out there for them because other people surrounding them, they're literally surrounded by other people who have gone through the same thing. So enabling them to be pulled together in community is extremely powerful.
That's a good word. Thank you for the light that you're shining, the passion that you're bringing. Again, the book is Troubled Minds, and I love the tie into the church's mission. So thanks for taking time to be with us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
This topic of mental illness in the church is a significant one. We hope that today's show has helped equip you to better lead your church in this area. Remember, we're walking through a series of episodes on this topic, and our previous show with Kay Warren is available on the archives. You can visit edstetzer.com, look in the top right corner, click on The Exchange, and find that episode with Kay Warren, today's episode, and a host of other episodes with guests like Derwin Gray and Matt Chandler and Tim Keller and others. Now, next week's show is going to be particularly fascinating. We're going to have Kirk Cameron here with us talking about culture wars and how to redeem holidays for the sake of the gospel. I think it's going to be fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. So make sure to hang out with us again next week. And as you go, remember that you can always find resources from today's episode by clicking on the link below. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange, read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research, and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange is presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media. Thanks for listening to the Exchange Radio Podcast. Programming like this is made available through your support. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.